Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. Over my 3 years here, I've told you a number of my faults and failings and foibles, but there's one that I have not yet told you, and I'm going to do that today. I am a horrible, atrocious, addicted gambler. Now, I don't ever go to the casino, and I don't play cards or dice, and I don't gamble online, and I don't bet on sporting events, though if I did, I would have won a lot of money because I knew Texas wasn't going to win that game. But anyway, I don't gamble in all of those ways, which I know so many people struggle with. That is not how I gamble. But when I tell you, you're going to be very disappointed in me. The way that I gamble is every time I drive west, I go over the I-10 bridge in Lake Charles. I do it, I take my life in my hands, okay? I run the odds and say it's not going to fall down today. I don't know that for sure, okay? It's like playing Russian bridge. But the reality is, I gamble, and I know it. And I know people who tell me when I tell them, like, I can't believe you do that, Father Sunset, you're going to die. I'm like, I know I will, but I'll get to the airport quicker. And the reality is why am I terrified of the Lake Charles I-10 bridge? Why is everybody terrified of the Lake Charles I-10 bridge? Is it because of the drivers on it? No, because it's the same drivers everywhere in Louisiana. Yes, y'all are all crazy, we are all about to die, it's fine, but that's not why I fear the bridge. Is it because it's high? No, I'm not a fan of heights, but I've been on higher places. Is it because of the pistols on the side? Sure, I guess people look at that and then get in trouble. But we all know why we're scared of that bridge. Because of the part we can't see, the part that's under us, is held together by tooth floss and fairy dreams. We all know that. We all know that. And that's why when I drive on that bridge, especially when the traffic is going slow, I leave at least a good 100 feet between me and the next person, because I'm like, look, we're just going to give a couple of extra cars not being on the bridge so that it doesn't like just decide to go today, all right? And those 18-wheelers come, I'm like, don't you dare. Okay, you're going to kill us all right? But, right, the reality, dear brothers and sisters, is that this is true of a lot of things in our life, and Jesus talks about this a lot, about the importance of foundations, even unseen foundations. And he doesn't use the Lake Charles Bridge, but he uses almost this exact image of someone trying to build something, not securing the foundation, and it all crumbling. The great spiritual writers of our tradition have commonly talked about that foundation, that hidden foundation, that need for a solid foundation without which the spiritual life cannot flourish. They've considered that foundation to be humility. And it's even connected in the word. In Latin, the word for humility comes from the word for earth, ground, dirt, right? The part that you have to dig up and make secure before you build anything else. And I certainly know the necessity of humility for growth in the spiritual life, both in my own life and others. I've seen people make what looks like really great spiritual progress, only to have it all collapse and crumble to the ground because they didn't secure the foundation of humility. And today, in our first reading in our gospel, we hear a lot about humility, and so I thought I would talk about it. I know I've preached about it before, but I want to talk about it in a slightly different way today, especially as that foundation. And we're going to pull out something that I haven't pulled out yet. It's not that I remember. You may remember and say, Father says that. You said that 2 weeks ago, but my brain doesn't work anymore. But I'm going to pull out something from one of our great spiritual masters, because that's going to be something we do a lot this year. I'm going to be not just preaching about topics, I'm going to be taking in solid, practical advice from the best spiritual masters we have in our tradition. And today we're going to be looking at Saint Benedict. and his 12 steps to humility. Now, I'm not going to go step by step, and if you were to go pick up St. Benedict's 12 Steps of Humility, which was written 1,500 years ago, and read it, you'd be like, that was a real one. Okay. But the reality is he's taking things from a lot of different people, and he's structuring them, and he's writing to monks. Most of us aren't monks, right? But the core, the essence of what he's saying is very important. What I'd also like to say before I dive into this is, last weekend I mentioned briefly, in passing, something that we're going to be talking about a lot, which are the three stages or ages of the spiritual life. Right, the first stage, which is beginner, is trying to get rid of sin, trying to bring yourself into harmony with God's will. The second stage, where you're really focused on doing good, building the virtues, serving the church, serving Christ in the world. And the third stage, where you're really, you know, intent on union with God. And this is not me. Numerous people have seen in St. Benedict's 12 steps that it actually matches those three stages with four steps, four steps, four steps, and neat and tidy units, where he has you focus on different things. So we're going to really focus on those three stages. So we hear today in the first reading, humble yourself the more, the greater you are, and you will find favor with God. Conduct your affairs with humility. Jesus also says in the gospel, humble yourself and you will be exalted, and those who are exalted will be humbled. St. Benedict actually uses that phrase right at the beginning, and he points to the angels on Jacob's ladder who are ascending and descending, and he says that obviously, I don't know if it's obvious to me, but it's obvious to him, is that obviously this shows that you ascend by descending, and you descend by ascending. So the lower you go in humility, the more God's going to snatch you on high, and the more you try to exalt yourself, the more you'll be cast down. This is an important thing, to focus on humility, and especially on the first virtue connected to it, that's really the first four steps of St. Benedict's road to humility, which is that dirty word that nobody likes to hear anymore. Obedience. Obedience. And that's all the first four steps, where the first step is you realize that God is always watching you, that there's nothing that's hidden from his eyes. The second step is you renounce your own self-will. The third step is you willingly put yourself under a human superior. So it's not just, oh Lord, look how humble I am. I'm obeying you, but I'm not going to obey anybody else because I know better than all of the human race. No, you actually willingly put yourself under authority. And then the fourth step, which is, okay, this is not to get anybody upset, all right, but just as a side note, I want you all to know that I think about the steps of humility a lot. I don't ever live them, but I think about them a lot, okay? And the fourth step of humility was in my mind every minute of every day during COVID. Every minute of every day during COVID. And ain't nobody did it. Because the fourth step of humility is that you obey those in authority even when what is asked is difficult, contrary, or senseless to you. Not evil. I know it's hard for us to remember that there's a difference between stupid and evil. So they can't command you to sin and have you obey. They can tell you to do something dumb. You still have to obey. Like, for example, the example that I always give about this is that the speed limit on Camellia Boulevard in Lafayette is roughly 7.5 miles an hour. That is stupid, okay? It's stupid. That road is built like the Autobahn in Germany. That is a stupid speed limit. Yet, nevertheless, we have to obey. So this reality of letting go of our will, of obeying, of saying no to ourselves, is really the whole first stage of the spiritual life, of learning to obey God's will, learning to obey the church, of not trying to get things your own way. And to do that, even when it doesn't necessarily make sense to you, you don't agree with it. I remember when I was in the seminary, I told my formation advisor that I really prioritized obedience and that I did the best to obey everything that the seminary told me that I agreed with. And he said, well, but if you only obey when you agree, it's not obedience at all. Yes, it is. This is fine. And Jesus tells us that too, constantly in the gospel, that we have to obey. And that's hard, dear brothers and sisters. But I'm going to tell you that if you look at the scriptures, the kinds of sins that we obsess about, the kinds of sins that you hear about on social media, the kinds of sins that the media is always attacking us for being obsessed with, that's not what the scriptures talk about. They mention them. It's there. But if you're going to look at the thing that the scriptures and the saints are focused on, it is always pride and disobedience. Because they know that's at the root of everything. And the kind of the second stage, steps 5 through 8, are about knowing and acknowledging the truth about yourself, about myself. And he tells us this in different ways. And these are the things that people have a little trouble hearing, but you have to understand what you're really getting at. The first is, like, you have to confess what you do to others. Like, certainly go to confession, but also just be upfront with somebody who's like an accountability partner or something like that. Like, you have to be willing to admit that you're wrong. It's like half the human race can't do that. Admit that you're wrong. And then you have to be willing to be treated poorly. There is no road to humility that involves entitlement. But even more than that, I could tell you in my own life, one of the ways that I know that I do not have humility is that I do not take being insulted well. I don't go crazy about it. But when somebody says something, and I do not get easily offended, but when somebody says something like, I'm betraying the teaching of the church, or I'm a terrible priest, which happens a lot and it's never true, right? I get angry. And I don't handle that well. Whereas I should say, I've made mistakes about people in the past too, and hope that they just shrug it off. Why can't I do the same? Do you know why I can't do the same, dear brothers and sisters? Because those people are wrong, and they're like, okay, the reason I can't do the same is because I'm not humble. And then after that, we have to also, St. Benedict says, admit and know in ourselves that we are worms and the worst of men. Now, to understand that in a correct way, okay? To understand that in a real way. I read a book about this, which I absolutely loved, and the priest who wrote it was telling a story about how when he was in the seminary, he got really angry at somebody. He was like, you know, 20. He got really angry at somebody, and he told his spiritual director, like, I actually fantasized about murdering this guy. And I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that was in me. I couldn't believe that that thought occurred to me. And the spiritual director looked him dead in the eyes like, I can believe it. I see that anger in you. And the reality is, dear brothers and sisters, as a priest, I hear that all the time where people do stuff and then say, well, it wasn't really me. Was it an alien that was running your body? Like, who was it? Like, yeah, we have stuff within ourselves that we do not want to admit is there. So we don't have to put ourselves down. We don't have to say negative things about ourselves. We just have to admit that there are parts of us that are truly, deeply capable of evil. And then the last one is that you do nothing beyond the common rule of life. And that doesn't mean that you should be mediocre. St. Benedict's certainly not telling you to just like go along with the flow and never do anything special for God. But what he is saying is that there is a deep temptation, a deep temptation. I see this in myself and others. To do something special. Because people who aren't doing something special, ordinary Catholics, are just not good enough. And if you go to this retreat, or if you read this spiritual book, or if you do this devotional practice, or if you go to this kind of mass, then you're among the elite, you know? And against that, Benedict says, don't ever even do it. Don't just think that way. Don't even do it. Content yourself with doing what is normal. And if God calls you to something great, then do that, but don't seek it out on your own. And then the last 4 stages, which would be the perfection of the spiritual life, where we're supposed to really, you know, be seeking union with God, only then, and this is weird for people, but only then does Benedict start saying things like, you know, be humble in your speech and be calm and quiet and carry yourself humbly. And that's a big deal, y'all, because I want you to see the evolution, right? You begin with denying your will and obeying something greater than you, God, the church, your superior. Then you come to knowing yourself and recognizing what's within you so that when you act humble, it ain't fake. And a lot of people want to start with like, well, I'll just fake it till I make it. Like, no, I understand that's a good point that you're trying to do, but that's literally hypocrisy, right? If you're trying to act better on the outside than you are on the inside. You gotta fix what's within first. Now, that doesn't mean that you can, like, say, well, look, I'm deeply humble with him, but I'm just not humble enough to act like it yet so I can still be an arrogant jerk to everybody. Like, no, that's not what I'm saying. Still can't sin in pride. But his point is that humility will flow where first your will is conformed to God and then your mind is conformed to the truth about yourself, and then that'll flow outwardly in your actions, in the way you speak, in the way you carry yourself, and whether or not you make fun of people even, he says. Right? And that's when you start to do extra works of humility. We'll talk about this concept later too, supererogatory works. But this is what Jesus is talking about in the gospel today, where he said, you know, don't just do what you're expected to do, but humble yourself all the more, whether you go sit at the lowest place at table and then have the host lift you up, or whether you throw a banquet for the poor and those who are unable to repay you. He said, because then you'll get a reward in heaven. So this isn't just what's required of you. This is literally, I'm storing up savings in heaven. I'm storing up treasures in heaven. That's what the saints do. They don't just do what they need to do to scrape by. They do things over and above that give them a treasury of merits in heaven. That's where we get indulgences from, but we'll talk about that another time. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I want you to hear that loving, beautiful call to humility. To humility not just as some vague attitude or feeling, but humility in concrete decisions. To remember that the Lord always watches us, to remember that we have to let go of our own will, to remember that we have to obey, to remember that we have to acknowledge our sins to others and to ourselves, that we have to deal with menial treatment and insults patiently, that we have to not seek out a way to be special, better than everybody else, but actually commit ourselves to doing what is basic and doing it well. And then from that, to live concretely a beautiful witness to humility. So keep that in mind this weekend. Keep that in mind because it's the teaching of the Lord. And most of all, keep it in mind because you don't want your path to heaven to be as shaky as the I-10 bridge in Lake Charles. God bless you all.